best, most defining moments of my life when I told my professor to go fuck himself and I left class. That was like maybe the highlight of my entire fucking life. Not fucking 10 models, not any of that shit, but telling him to get fucked because I had made $400,000 that month playing poker. And I was not in the mood to hear his shit. And I fucking told him that. I said, motherfucker, I made more money last week than you'll make in the next 3 fucking years. So talk to me with some fucking respect. And we had it out. Like, and I was fucking right. And the thing that he said to me, the thing that he fucking said to me that really stuck out was, ah, if you're so fucking rich, what are you doing in college? And you know what? I thought about it for like 6 fucking seconds. I was like, you know what, dipshit? That's the first intelligent thing you've said all fucking semester. It's like, fuck you, I'm out of here. And I walked out, the whole fucking class went fucking crazy. And I never fucking forget the ride home. I was so fucking happy. I was like, I don't have to listen to this dumb fuck shit anymore. I don't have to show up to this fucking school. I don't have to listen to these motherfuckers. I can go wherever the fuck I want to go and nobody can tell me what to do. And that was like a fucking defining moment. And that was when I was like in my 20s, man. That was, I was like 27. You know, I was a fucking millionaire and I made the fucking money myself and I was stoked and I didn't have to listen to anybody's shit.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Money Mondays. I'm here with my co-host, The Real Tarzan. We have a very special guest. This has been a dear friend of both of ours for many, many years. They have traveled the world together. We've done businesses together, have fun together, social media together, play poker together, and everything in between. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a warm round of applause to Mr. Dan Bilzerian.
Fuck is up, dog? Cute applause.
Golf clap, golf clap. Snap.
All right, so normally people do bios. I don't think we really need to do one here, but I still like to give your version. What's the 2-minute bio on Mr. Dan Bilzerian?
Oh, man, I got to get my own bio. I like it when somebody else brags about me. Like,
I can do it.
I thought you were a hell of a hype man now.
Okay, so I can tell you guys. So about 15 years ago, I think we know each other since 2008.
Yeah, 2009. Yeah, when I was living in Panorama. Yep. Those are like the fucking...
Yeah, the penthouse at Panorama Towers. So we started an online poker site. I had some fun there, and social media started getting cracking in like 2010, 2011. All of a sudden, you go from like 400,000 followers to 1 million followers. Then there was this fun one where you do like 30 Xboxes on the table, and you said, tag a friend, and like 700,000 people tagged a friend. And you basically invented the tag a friend thing, and all of a sudden, you got like 4 million followers, and then the rest was history. But along the way, we've watched you play ultra high stakes poker. I mean, we're going to get into millions of dollars in poker sides. You invested in Bitcoin like a decade ago. There's so many interesting stories of Dan Bilzerian, and there's also a lot of mystery and mystique of everyone thinking like, how did he make this money? Where was it from? Poker? Was it from Bitcoin? Was it from cryptocurrency? Sponsorships, endorsement deals, and Ignite? What's the thing? And so
I feel like I perpetuated like a lot of it because the whole trust fund thing got me into so many games, yep. You know, and so I never really like argued it. I almost leaned on it. And so then when I kind of like got out of poker and I was like, yeah, like, you know, my trust fund never really like kicked in till way later. You know, it's funny because like people didn't believe it. And then they kind of like, it's funny, they like hated me for things that weren't true and then loved me for stuff that like, what, it was just like very strange. That's why I felt like I kind of had to write that book, you know, like set the record straight. And I still think people just like can't wrap their hands around that I made a bunch of money fucking playing poker. Yes. And
I would like to verify, by the way, I know the people he's beaten poker. So it's 100% and 1,000,000,000% true because I have to hear the stories. People cry to me about it, talked about the hands and, hey, Bilzerian had ace 4. I can't believe he had that, blah, blah, blah. And then lost $4 million to him in one night. It's true, guys.
Yeah, man. I have all the wire transfers. Exactly. Like, you know what
I
mean? Like,
it's not... I remember this one time, like, on Instagram, you posted a $10.4 or $10.8 million wire transfer. It was amazing.
Yeah, that wasn't even the biggest one. But, like, you know, it's funny because I wasn't really, like, trying to brag about that at the time. You know, it was one of those things where, like, I wanted people to think that I sucked. And so I would always, like, you know, talk about the fucking losses. I would never really, like, focus on the wins. And then when I quit poker, I kind of, like, would tell people my story and they just wouldn't believe it. And I kind of like really wouldn't give a fuck because I also thought that I might go back in, you know? And I'd like been so used to like leaning on the whole thing that whatever, fuck. I really don't give a shit if people believe that I got my money from poker or not. I honestly don't. And honestly, I wouldn't give a fuck where I got my money either. Like, it all spends the same. Like, right. I don't give a fuck. I wish I got handed all the fucking money. It would have been a lot less fucking stress in my life. Probably have more fucking hair. You know?
Is there any in particular poker hand that stands out? Is there any like one major hand? Win or lost?
Yeah, for sure. It was the biggest hand I ever played. It was against Andy Beal, and it was against Al Gores, and I totally fucked it up. I fucked it up so bad. I had ace four of diamonds, and he had, I won't tell you what he had. So the board come, two diamonds. And we're playing 10K, 25K at the time, heads up. And I don't remember exactly like how many bets we got in on the flop, but it was like, I think it was like a raise, re-raise or whatever, and then a call or something like that. But it was like, there was at least like $3 or $4 million. I think it was like $4 million at least in the turn comes, the diamond, give me the nuts. And he led into me $3 million.
Wow.
And I had like, I had 18 million to start the hand. So he led into me three. And I really like, we had enough money where I just didn't want to give him a free card to like pair the board. I thought he had a pretty big hand. He's not a big fucking like fan of folding big hands. So I like re-raised him the minimum, just three, but you know, $3 million, $3 million, you know? I'm just like, well, if I make it 6 million, I can ship the fucking river for sure.
Right.
And he can't fold for another three. And then like, how's he going to fold in the river when there's fucking, you know what, if six, 12 plus three, you know, there's fucking, you know, it's four, like six, less than a, less than a pot sized bet to ship the river. Is like, so it just seemed like, what else are they going to raise? You know, I didn't want him to fold at the fucking nuts, but at the same time, like, I didn't want him to draw for free. I don't know. I guess like looking back, maybe I should have just called. I mean, if I would have just called, I would have got all the fucking money. I played it probably the worst possible way I could have played it. And he just fucking tanked. And that was another thing, is like, he would ask me all these fucking questions. He would fucking ask like if he could take money back. Like, right. This is basically like, goes through this whole fucking thing. And you're like in his house, you feel kind of like rude, like not accommodate, like just to ignore the guy when he's asking you questions. But at the same time, he's getting like tons of information off you for free.
Right.
It was just a weird spot, man. And anyways, I ended up just like going to the fucking bathroom after like 40 minutes of like his questions. And this,
come on, not that long.
I'm telling you, it was the longest hand I've ever fucking played in poker. And I probably like said some shit. I just wanted the hand to be over. Like, I was just like, it was so much fucking money. And I was winning a bunch of money at the time. I think I was up like, I don't even know. I mean, if I had 18 in front of me, I had to be up. I don't remember. I was up a lot of money. The pot was already, you know, decent size, you know? So I was like, I don't know. Looking back, I should have wanted to fucking get all the money, you know? But sometimes, like, when it's that much money, you're like, okay, just taking down the pot.
Right.
I mean, just the thought of, like, the board pairing and him fucking sending it in, you know? Like, I don't know. It would have been pretty brutal. And then I would have lost the biggest hand of my life. I mean, that would have been a $36 million hand.
Oh, my God.
You know? So it's like, to go from, like, winning to, like, lose. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, man. I guess I was, like, playing, like, outside of my comfort zone, because you should never really, like, play based on emotion, kind of. You know what I mean? Like, you should just do the right thing.
Right.
Like, and the money shouldn't matter. Like, and I think Negron, you said that the other day. It was, like, basically, like, you know, you should play where it's just chips, you know? And you're playing, like, in proportion to the blinds and this and that. It's not like, oh, it's, you know, millions of dollars. And actually, like, the time that he fucked me up was when he started betting in things. He was like, oh, I bet a Ferrari and that was 300 grand. Or like, you know, I raise you a Learjet. And so I had to, like, you know, he wouldn't say like, and I was like, okay, well, how much is that?
Yeah,
and then he would tell you how much it was, but like, you can't fucking get it out of your mind that like he's betting a Learjet, you know?
And then like, you know, Learjet have 10 seats or 14
right?
seats?
Like, there was, no, it was a Ferrari, it was a Bugatti, and then a Learjet. That's how he did it. He had like three. Yeah,
that's
like,
a lot of money.
Yeah, so like when he did it, and then he was also like flexing, his girl was there. But like all the other times, I was just like mathematically beating him. I was just like firing. I was actually the one putting pressure on him, which is like very counterintuitive to like how you would think a billionaire would play. But he had been playing with Andy Beal, and the strategy against Beal was like, okay, I'm going to lose $4 million, I'm going to lose $3 million, but I'm going to clip the fucking guy for $50 million when he calls me. You know what I mean? Yep. When he just has top pair and I have a set and he can't win and I bring home fucking, you know, $50 million win. And so it's like, that's how he played Beal and it worked. You know, so for me, it was like he was okay losing $8 million, $6 million, $10 million, you know, thinking that he's just going to clip me for fucking all the money one of these times. And which, you know, wasn't like out of the realm of possibility, you know, like, fuck, we're buying it for $5 million or, you know, I got fucking $18 million, like one hand, he could just fucking wipe me out. And we had some cooler hands, you know, like definitely like spots where if it was like switch, like I could have just like gone, like the hand fucking you know, he played. Like, he folded the second nut flush.
He had a king high flush though?
He had a fucking king high flush.
Not, I'm not folding to you. Sorry, bro.
Like, I don't even, like, like, I don't think he's the right only play. Guy yeah. in the fucking universe that isn't just, like, trying to figure out how to get the money in the pot.
Of course. I'm not,
like, heads up, because I would have played a jack high flush the exact same way. I'm not folding
a king high flush to Dan Bilzerian.
That's what I'm saying. Like, ever. Ever.
I can't sleep at night. No, I can't do it.
Fucking crazy.
I love you. I can't do it. I'm not folding king high flush to you.
I could fucking believe it.
You're going to have to show me.
It was so fucking nuts. But just goes to show, like, how bad I played the fucking hand. But also, like, one of the reasons why I was just able to fucking run this dude over. Like, you don't fold
right,
the second
nut. Right, he's going
to
fold that, yeah.
Like, you don't fold the second nut flush ever. It's like folding kings preflop to right. a fucking guy heads right. up, like, with 100, 200 big ones. You just don't ever do it.
Right.
Like, ever, ever, ever. Especially, like, with the amount of aggression that I was showing. So, I don't know, man. That was definitely one that I've lost sleep over for sure.
Do you still like poker now?
No, I don't. I don't. I got to a point where, like, the wins didn't bring me, like, even close to the amount of, like, happiness that the losses would give me, like, misery. Like, I would get pissed when I lost, like, small amounts of money, even, like the money that, like, was insignificant. Just I just didn't like to lose, and I don't know. And every game that we're playing, we're losing, you know, or, like, you know, you're playing for amounts where, like, if you lose in the real world, it's significant money, you know, like in the poker game, it's not that much, right. But you know, so I don't know.
All right. So Tarzan and you have gone on some amazing trips around the planet. How do you decide what countries, what events, how do you pick the girls? Like, tell us about the story of how do you go make your travel plans?
I mean, shit. He's like, you want to go here? Like, yeah. When? He's like, tomorrow. Fuck it. I'm there. That's yeah. how it went, you know?
Yeah, no, he was good because, like, you want a guy that can do shit with you. You right. know, like, so many times I'm on these trips just surrounded by bitches, and it's like, it's cool to get high and fuck chicks all day, but, like, you know, you also want to do cool shit. And he was always, like, pushing to do cool shit. You know, like, we dove in the cenotes, you know, we did, like, cool shit in Thailand. We're, like, fucking diving off the yacht. You know, it was just more fun when there was guys. And I noticed that when we brought him out. It was like a cool, you know, twist of the dynamic. And,
hanging out with the boys, you know, yeah. It's a boys trip. Yeah, having fun, doing stupid shit. I tell him, like, yo, don't go in there with the cobra. He goes in with the cobra.
Meanwhile, he's like fucking bobbing and weaving. This thing's like striking at his face. It's like, yeah, so is there like any antidote? He's like, no, you die pretty much. Like the handler is like, yeah, no, you're pretty much like instantly dead if a nine-foot cobra bites you in the face. And he's over there thinking he's fucking Manny Pacquiao.
You got bit by that fucking alligator.
I got bit. Yeah, he brings this alligator to my house. I think it's like somewhat house trained. The fucking thing bites me in the leg.
We were gonna bring a snake today, and Blitz was like, "No,
leave that." No, I'm not fucking experiencing wildlife animals.
Too much fun, man. Yeah. Too much fun.
All right, so we've all got to watch Ignite grow all through the social media years, from Halloween parties at the mansions to obviously trips with girls on yachts and private jets. Talk to us about the allure, like the concept of Ignite, and why it's the most unique brand there is.
So basically it was like 2017. I had a girlfriend. I'd just started dating her, I think, at the end of 16. And I'd been going fucking hard in the paint, man. Honestly, I think like the years from, I don't know, 13, 14 to 16 were probably the crazy. Probably like from 13 to 16. That 3-year period was probably the nuttiest because it was kind of like all new to me. I just fucking won, you know, crazy money in poker. I just started becoming famous and the pussy was just like coming at me from every direction because I was running a poker game. So we had all the poker chicks. There's all the models. I started doing the pool parties in LA. You remember that? You know, fucking 300 girls and you'd have like 30 dudes there and I'd bring the masseuses and the fucking, you know, like champagne, you know, the girls are just basically like having a blast. They're laying out by the pool, getting the sun, drinking champagne, getting massages, all this shit, getting their nails done. And the guys are just like hanging out and these girls were, you know, but fuck, they'd get drunk and come over and like try and fuck you. You know what I mean? It was like one of these like predatory environments where like the girls were the predators, you know, we were just chilling. You know what I'm saying? You got 300 drunk, fucking horny girls. And they're just like, you know, the dick was like the scarcity. It was like a very, like we flipped the fucking script on these girls, you know, like normally they're at the fucking bar and every fucking dude's like bird dogging them and this and that. And it was just like at these pool parties, like they weren't getting any attention. Nobody was fucking talking to them, you know, and this is like the baddest chick from fucking Maryland or whatever. You know what I mean? She's never been like ignored in her life, you know? So she's got to like go talk to a guy to feel validated. And so it's just like a very different, dynamic. And started doing that. And like I said, yeah, between that, the poker games and the social media shit and the traveling and the just everything, it was just like fucking mayhem. And I was partying more, like, you know, I don't really get fucked up that much anymore. You know, like back then I was like, you know, we had Quaaludes, we're getting fucked up. And it was just like, there's just debauchery that would be going on. And also this was kind of like before all these girls had social media too. So like they really wanted to get famous and like there was no real ways for them to get famous. And also like stuff wasn't, you know, I would post like maybe like 5% of the shit that would happen. Right. Like there, like it was so like, there wasn't as much being broadcast. There was no IG stories. You know what I'm saying? Like, so there was like, you know, I wasn't really fucking around with Snapchat much. So there was no, I actually didn't think I had Snapchat back then. So there was like no, like there wasn't, like it wasn't being filmed. Right, no, you know, behind the scenes, yeah. Yeah, it was like, so these girls could get as crazy as they wanted to. And like, we had these, like, we had some of the girls, you know, like fucking, I don't know, Maybelline, Rosie. There was like some fucking wild ass girls that would get all the other girls fucking amped up and shit. And it was just a different environment, right? Like there's no cameras, nothing going on. The girls just got like fucking crazy. And, you know, also when you're getting fucked up, like shit, just crazier shit happens, you know, like as opposed to just like, fuck, man, during the night days, I was mostly just like high all the time. Like I was still getting a ton of pussy, but like, I was just like, I don't know. You just do crazier shit when you're fucked up. You know what I mean? You think to do crazy. Like, I mean, I fucked girls in like a public bathroom. I fucked a girl in a hotel lobby. Like just shit that you wouldn't do sober. You know what I mean? Like you don't think to do. Yeah. Like it's just, fuck it. You would try things and it was just work, you know? Like I fucked a girl without saying a single word to her. Like, I don't know, just stuff that you just wouldn't try sober. You just like, oh, the chick wants to fuck, we'll go fuck. Like, but you know, when you're fucked, you're drunk or you're fucked up, you're like, oh, like what kind of crazy shit could I do? You know what I mean? You start pushing the boundaries. And I don't know, man. It was just, you know, it was fucking wild time. But anyways, like I said, that was the craziest time. And then 2016-ish, I got a girlfriend for like a year, because after you do that for a certain period of time, you need some kind of break, right? So I took a break and I kind of want to get back in it, but I also wanted to like figure out how to do something with this social media presence that I had. Like everybody was coming up to me, right, in every fucking country. Like I had no privacy. So I'm like, fuck, man, if I'm like taking pictures of motherfuckers in the parking lot in fucking 5 years from now and I don't have anything to show for it, like I'm gonna be pissed, right? If I have all the inconvenience without the upside. The only upside was like it was easier to get laid, but aside from that, like there wasn't any monetary upside. There was just nothing else. I figured like, fuck it, I'll build a brand. And then it also just like seemed like there was more of a purpose if you had a brand. Like, I don't know, because I was like getting tired of posting on social media. I like wasn't gonna do it for myself anymore. Like I'd already done it. I was kind of like over it. But I felt like for a brand, I would like lean into it more, and I would be more excited about like building a brand than just like posting to show everybody like, oh, I got money and I'm getting pussy. Like I was like, I'd beat that drum enough. I was fucking done with it, you know? Exactly. Yeah, we're
off the puss.
Yeah, I was off the puss. I was like, fuck it, man. So anyway, so I started Ignite in like 2018. And it's funny, man, because there's like, you know, all these fucking idiot articles come out like, oh, Ignite funded his lifestyle. It's like, motherfucker, I was doing that for like fucking 7 years before I even started Ignite.
2009, you
know?
You were doing it with me.
Yeah, like it's like these people are so stupid. Like I bought my jet in 2014, you fucking mullets. But anyways, so we started Ignite in like 18 and
damn, that's a low one. Don't a fucking mullet.
Can we make that a clip, please?
And so,
my jet 2014.
Yeah, so like 2018 come around and yeah, we started Ignite and it was just, I just knew that house in LA was the fucking spot. You know, like I saw it and I was just like, fuck, this is it. Like if I'm gonna do it, like this is the spot to do it. And I don't know, man. I didn't want to have, like, I was like, fuck it, I'm gonna do it. Like we're gonna fucking do it. So I raised, you know, it was like 30 or 40 million bucks to start. And and the funny thing is, like, all the money that I raised is all private money. It was, like, no fucking shareholders' money. It was all, like, private fucking money from, like, friends that all knew exactly what the fucking plan was. And the plans fucking worked, you know? And so, yeah, we just started throwing fucking crazy parties, got the crazy house, and just fucking leaned into it, man. And it was a fucking crazy-ass ride until COVID hit. And then it was like, man, all our stuff got stuck in China. There was all these restrictions. It was like, man, COVID was a big pivot. We started like, we left the weed space. We went into vapes, which is something I wanted to do like long before, but we finally like got out of our fucking deal that we had with this, this vape manufacturer that couldn't do in the, it was the whole thing. But anyways, we got out of it, pivoted, got out of weed, went to vapes.
Tequila, vodka.
Yeah, tequila, vodka, to the spirits. And then I focused on my book. Yep. I was like locked in a fucking room for a year and a half doing the book. And then when I finally finished the book, I was like, went on a yacht for like 3 or 4 months, spent a couple months in Thailand, like really just had to just chill the fuck out. I got another girlfriend. And so, yeah, it was like the 3 years of Ignite was just fucking mayhem and partying. And then I got a girlfriend, did the books. It's kind of like, it's been a roller coaster, man. It's almost like predictable. It's like, I'll go fucking balls to the wall for 3 years. Then I'll get a girlfriend for like a year and then we'll fucking go back, you know, going hard in the paint and, that's, you know, it's been the ride.
So there's 23 million people that have a question for you. When you have a girlfriend, what happens with the other girls?
I mean, historically, I've been like pretty much like just with my chick. I mean, we may do threesomes here and there, but I don't know. I mean, I usually get so fucking tired of like dealing with the constant fucking girls that I just get almost burn out. It's like if you ate Snickers bars every fucking day for 3 years, you just kind of wouldn't want Snickers for a little while. And then, you know, after a year of not eating Snickers, you want more fucking Snickers again. You know, I don't know. That's the way I kind of describe it. So.
That's fucking hilarious.
It's true, man. I'm telling you, too much of anything you want to fucking break.
Yeah.
All right. So we talked a little bit about Ignite, a little bit about poker. Now on the business side, you guys went public. You guys now have all these different product lines. How involved are you in Ignite? Like, is this something that you're going to be doing for years? Like, what's your plan with Ignite?
Well, you know, the vape space to me is like super interesting, right? Because I think there's, first of all, I hate cigarettes. I've always fucking hated cigarettes. I feel like it's the healthiest alternative. Also, you're not affecting anybody else around you, right? Like, when you vape, like, nobody else has to breathe that shit in. If you're in a fucking car with your fucking kids, you're not poisoning their fucking lungs. You still get your nicotine hit, but you don't have all the carcinogens. So to me, it's just like a no-brainer for somebody that likes nicotine that doesn't want to fucking die of cancer. So, you know, I feel pretty good about it. I mean, I don't know. And then the spirits, the tequila's fucking great. You know, vodka's good. So it's good products. It's just, you know, been a slow road with the alcohol just because, you know, you got to unless you just want to like give away the fucking world, right, to go with a big distributor like Southern and they take a big piece of it or whatever. You know, if you want to do it kind of like the grassroots way, like how Tito's did it, and then you fucking still own your brand, it just takes time, you know? So we've just been putting in the fucking time, but really like leaning on the vapes. Cause that's, to me, I think the big opportunity. We can ship it all around the world. I mean, that's another big thing is like 83% of my following is outside the fucking US, right? So like, I'm now able to sell to all of them. We're in 70 fucking countries, you know, we're able to fucking sell vapes all around the world. It's got a good, oh, is that my food?
Yep.
Thank God.
Boom.
Thank you.
Coming in hot.
All right, perfect.
You'll be the first and only guest allowed to eat a burger during the interview.
This is probably not the best idea, but
fuck it.
That's all right.
Either way. Okay.
Thank you. All right.
So yeah, man, just been focused on the vapes a lot, really. I mean, that's kind of the, you know, the golden goose to me. And I think that's going to be the future. And I hopefully at some point, you know, be able to fucking sell that. And I don't know, spend more time free diving in fucking Thailand.
When you sell Ignite, will you do another company afterwards?
I think I'm going to have to stay with it for a while. You know, I don't think I can just like sell it and leave because I'm just like
you're the face, obviously.
Yeah, just like too involved. So
are vapes your number one SKU?
Yeah, for sure. It's not even close.
You crush everything else. Fuck,
we did like 100 and something million in sales last year in vapes. Like,
damn.
Yeah, it's definitely like unequivocally the best one. And it's got the best like margins too.
Yeah.
I mean, and I can sell you way more fucking vapes. Like if you're the biggest alcoholic in the world, like how much fucking tequila can you drink a week?
Seriously.
You know what I mean? Like you're not going to drink a bottle a day. You can smoke a vape a day.
How many pulls do you get out of each vape?
So the industry is really moving to the higher puff counts. And so like the stuff that we're selling is like, I don't know, our big seller was the 1500 initially, and now our 5000 is like outselling everything.
Wow. Damn.
Yeah.
All right, while you take some bites of your food, I'm gonna ask Tarzan some questions. So Tarzan, you got over 200 million views last month. One video last week got 105 million views.
It's at like 115 million now.
Jesus.
It's just going.
So talk us through, how does animal content, how did you build this up, how did you get so many zillions of views on your social media?
Well, man, I just think being, like I said before, being authentic, you know, I have an eye for animal content too. There was a time in my life where I was just watching nothing but animal content on TV, Animal Planet, Discovery, and there was a point in time where it changed. It went from like real good documentation of wild animals and good descriptions until I started learning about animals more. And then people would post like a Burmese python, but they'd show a ball python and it would piss me off, you know, or they would like have a bald eagle and they would have like a red tailed hawk screaming in the background, you know, and it would just like, I kind of stopped wanting to watch TV, you know? So when I got into social media, I was like, man, when I post stuff, I want to post stuff one first, real raw animal content first. And then when I'm also in front of the camera, I want to give people real facts about animals and just be authentic about it, you know, and just engage with the audience. So, you know, I can sit there and spew on about 60 seconds about an animal, but you can't give a full description of some species in 60 seconds. So in these captions, I'm like, yo, go on Google and learn about this animal. Simple, you know, like Google this animal and give me some facts. I'll pin the top five comments or I'll comment back or follow back, so on and so forth. So just trying to figure out new engagement of people getting interested in animals. And I also think I got a lot of followers because I'm black. You know, not a lot of black people are in the fucking free diving with sharks and
getting bit by snakes.
Getting bit by snakes, you know, and just actually being cool about it, educating about it, you know, having that entertainment, but also having education, you know. So, again, I have the eye for certain content, like that video just we just talked about, you know, it's a cassowary, the most dangerous bird on the planet, you know, making its call. And I haven't seen that before online. So I'm like, yo, it's actually one of my buddies that was in Australia, and he's like going down his camera roll, and he every time I go travel, I'm like, yo, show me some cool videos you got. And people start showing me shit, and I'm like, yo, airdrop me that, you know, and I see it. They'll send me, you know, 30 videos, but that one, I post it, gone. It's over with. Everybody posts it. It's 100 million views, 200 million views, just one video. I'm like, makes me feel good.
I feel like the algorithm likes you.
Yeah. I think so, too.
I've definitely noticed that. It's funny. I didn't know if he was kind of like, you know, the real deal or kind of like a little full of shit or whatever. In Thailand, I remember he was like, I'm going to catch one of these fucking water monitors. Like, yeah, okay, dude. Go ahead, yeah. Sure, it was like 6 fucking foot long, like faster than a motherfucker. I'm like, yeah, okay. The fucking guy comes back, he's got this fucking thing by the tail. I'm like, come on. Like the snake thing, like I get it, like okay, we could fake that, but like motherfucker caught a water monitor with his bare hands, like in the wild.
Like out of a septic tank.
Yeah, no shit. Of a fucking shit tank. I remember that.
Yo, remember we walked into that sea turtle rescue?
Yeah.
We just broke into a sea turtle rescue across the street. Yeah. We're like walking around catching lizards, and then there's this random building. I'm like, what's over here? We hear the ocean, and we walk, and we just literally walk through a sea turtle rehab center, and we just like start picking up sea turtles and talking about them. Just random stuff like that, you know?
Right now, we're parked at your house in Las Vegas, and he just showed me some of the turtles and tortoises that he brought to the house.
Yeah, that's how we met, man, honestly. Yep. I came to L.A. a long time ago, and for my first time actually coming to L.A., you know, Jay, LiveRich Media, yep. He sends me a DM. He's like, bro, I don't shoot niggas, only bitches, but you, I'm going to shoot you. When you come to LA, hit me up. So I'm like eating at Roscoe's. I post Roscoe's. He's like, yo, my place is right across the street. That's when I met you too.
Yeah.
So I went over. I was like, I'm going to go meet up with him. Because I was going to leave, like go straight to the airport because I was leaving.
Yep.
And I was like, yeah, I got to hit Roscoe's for the first time ever. Oh my God. He's like, come over. So he sent me the address. Like, yo, you're like literally less than a mile away. So I went over there. I met with Jay, met you. And Jay's like, he goes, yo, one of my buddies wants some tortoises. I'm like, well, you're fucking talking to the tortoise guy. Yeah. Like, I got what you need, you know? Just let me know who it is, what he wants, or make it happen. So he FaceTimes Dan. Dan was, he was somewhere else in the country.
That was when I first bought this house.
Yeah, yeah.
It was back in 18.
It was, bro, wild. So Dan, he hops on FaceTime. He's like, yo, what up, Tarzan? You know, I love tortoises, blah, 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 blah. I want some in my yard. So I'm like, say less, bro. He goes, when do you want it? Tomorrow. Today. So, you know, Dan took care of the flight and everything. I got over here, and me and my uncle drove to Arizona, went to Home Depot, picked up tortoises in Arizona, drove them back in a minivan, built a little habitat for them in the back, you know,
six
dug a hole.
Six.
We pulled the seats out the minivan. We got buckets from Home Depot. I called my buddy up, Arizona Tortoise Compound. We got these, bro, massive tortoises. You see them. We have big ones at home. His are humongous. I mean, they've been sitting in this facility. There's like 1,000 tortoises there.
1,000?
1,000. I was like, bro, I need the biggest tortoises for my buddy Dan. He's like, bro, I'll give you the biggest ones I got. I don't sell them, but take them. So we got them. We drove them back to Arizona the same day, turned around, came, put them in there. And then the cool thing about Dan was that I hadn't met him yet. So when we first got to the house, you guys don't know this, but he has tortoise statues everywhere. Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, yo, this motherfucker actually likes tortoises.
Might be more than goats. Who knows?
Yeah. Like, you know, his whole Ignite logo is the goat. Friendly. He's the goat. But this guy really loves tortoises. So Dan pulls up later on, like maybe a day or two later. This motherfucker comes in with tortoise shorts on. I'm like, yo, you can't write this shit in the book. You know? So that's how we met, you know? And this is my first time back here. 5 years now? Yeah, well, it was 2018 we did that. And
One more question before he's finishing up this burger.
Yeah.
So Dan Bilzerian calls you and says, hey, let's go to a foreign country with 16 girls. You get there. How do you keep the girls and Dan safe from the animals you're interacting
with?
Been a few times. You know, that's my number one thing, you know, going with people in these different countries and doing crazy shit. You know, I have to keep everybody safe because at the end of the day, if someone does get hurt, it's going to be real hard on my mental knowing that, you know, I'm a professional and I let, even though we have to do entertainment and have our fun and, you know, fuck up the algorithm and make content, I don't want anybody to get hurt,
right?
Especially this guy. You know, you tell him, Dan, whatever you do, don't take the tape off that alligator's mouth. You know what Dan says? Take the tape off. Don't go in that pit with the cobra. Yeah. He's fully intact with venom. Dan hops in the pit, you know? So you got to kind of like reverse psychology, you know? Like, yo, go in the pit. He's like, I think I'm going to stay out. You know? So take the tape off. I keep the tape on, you know? So
I think Su Lin got wrapped up by one of them Burmese
bison. Yeah, right? Bitter. Mm-hmm. Bitter wrapped her up.
Crazy.
Yeah. She got lucky, man. It could have been worse.
And saw that big ass and just couldn't help himself.
So recently you were with Logan Paul doing that whole Prime commercial thing and him and KSI. And a snake, it looked like it bit you in the pants. And then the other video bit you in the arm. Like,
yeah.
Is that on purpose? Or are you protecting it? Like, how many times have you been bit by a snake?
I mean, I started getting bit when I was a kid. So I got my first snake at 3, turned in 4. And I begged my parents for it. I used to catch them outside. It's like, get that snake out the house, throw him away. And going back to Australia, and I've been bitten thousands of times leading up to
thousands
of times. It's a point in time where I worked at a reptile facility in Florida, and I worked in the snake room. And we had about 400 snakes in there, and I had to clean their habitats every day. You know, they were small snakes, but they would bite me every day. We get imports in, like 1,000 snakes in, you know, 100 boxes or 10 boxes or 100 snakes in each box or whatever, and I got to go through and count each snake. So snakes are biting me nonstop. So not that I'm immune to it, but it's just like, it's what you expect. You know, it's like a boxer. I heard boxers, after they get punched in a lot, they just don't even blink.
Right.
You know,
they'll be... Like gets bitten by venomous snakes like over and over and over again, and then eventually kind of like gets immune to it.
That's the thing. Yeah, some guys are just like, they build up a tolerance. You know, it has to come in small doses. There's some guys that do it. There's a guy like Bill Haas back in the day from Florida. Oh, gee, he used to get bit all the time and just like sweat it out, walk it off. We got it. Cool. And I was just recently in Australia. A couple guys, they just get bit and they fucking, you know, drink a beer. Sweat it out on the couch. If they make it, they all make good. It. Yeah, they're all good. Some guys go in a fucking coma. Some guys die immediately in 30 minutes. It just depends on your immune system. It's like a bee sting. Yeah. You know, some guys get stung by a bee. They'll swell up with hives. Their throat will close up. Some guys get stung and they're like, ah, this shit's, you know, like flick the bee off and they're on the way. You know?
All right, Dan. Question.
Crazy.
So on your social media, you've shown me before your engagement on your Instagram stories as an example. You have more views than you have followers. Is that because you have people that follow you that aren't allowed to follow you because they're not allowed to click follow, but they actually follow you and they actually watch you, but they can't actually watch you because their girlfriend or boyfriend get mad?
No. A lot of motherfuckers watching but pretending they're not watching. Yeah, I mean, I can see it with the view count looking. Hell yeah, you know.
All right, we got 31 million, 42 million, 46 million, 51 million, 41 million, 50 million, 50 million. And you only have 33 million followers, but you're
giving me stories are like 6 to 9, 6 or 10. Jesus.
51 million. Look at that.
On the reels, bro, that's crazy, dog.
On an account that has 33 million followers.
Beyonce numbers. We're more than Beyonce.
Yeah, I compared them. Like, I beat everybody.
Rock, everybody.
Kardashians, all of them. Pretty crazy, but I guess it makes sense. Like, a lot of those guys are putting out shit content, so I don't really post a ton. I feel like even during my peak, I wasn't posting like a crazy amount.
Yeah.
I feel like it's better to post less, just better stuff.
You know? Yeah, you go months without posting at times.
Fuck, man. Well, yeah, long time. I think people just get like addicted to the attention.
Yeah.
Where they just need like that dopamine hit every time they post and get the likes and this and that. But then it's like, fuck, man, you get on this like treadmill where it's like you just have to constantly like be one-upping yourself and thinking about content, you know, because this shit doesn't just like happen. You know what I mean? Like, you have to get like a camera guy has to be shooting it. And like, a lot of times we'll do badass shit and just get no good shots of it. Because just because you do something fucking cool with hot chicks doesn't mean you're going to get a usable shot. You know,
there's so many people replicate you or try to be you and they don't get anywhere near the engagement, obviously.
Well, but a lot of like, they're doing like setup shots, right? So they'll be like, oh, let's get a bunch of girls and let's get a photo. And it's like, it just never works the same as when you just do it and just happen to get a picture, or they're just shooting it and, you know, you get a shot. Because like, if you set up a shot, girls are looking at the camera. It's just posy. It just doesn't like, the internet just sees through all that shit.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, fuck, he's been on vacations. Like, I'm fucking the girls. You know what I mean? Like, we're partying. It's like, shit's real. It's not like we're going down there for a goddamn photo shoot, you know? Like, so, I don't know. I mean, it was just, you know, authentically captured fucking craziness. I mean, that's what happens when you put a bunch of fucking hot chicks and there's not fucking any dudes around, you know? Like, you're going to get laid. It's like, I don't know. I mean, we went to badass places. We got the biggest yachts, the fucking coolest villas. Like, we're doing shit on a level that, I don't know, like, you couldn't really, like, one up. So I feel like after COVID, I kind of, like, got to a spot, too, where I was like, fuck, man, I'd just done everything. And I'd done everything on, like, such a high level that it was kind of like, fuck, where do we go, you know? And so,
do you ever become numb to it?
Yeah, I just started going on, like, more couples trips. And, like, we're doing more yachts. We're doing more, like, trips to Thailand, shit like that. And it was funny, man. I was on a trip to Thailand, and I had three girls with me. And I just felt like I was like obligated to fuck these girls like each day. And if I didn't, like, want to get upset, you know what I mean? Like, it was like, I was like, fuck, I just don't want to do this. Like, I want to work out. I want to fucking free dive. I want to hang with my friends. I want to get high. You know, I want to have a chick to bang if I want to bang, but like, I don't want to have to feel like I have to fuck three times a day every, you know what I mean? Like, and I just didn't want to deal with it. So I sent the two girls home and I was with the one, and like, you know, She was cool, but, you know, she wasn't like some fucking rock star or anything, but I just had way more fun just being with one chick and hanging out with my buddies. And, you know, I don't know. It just taught me a lesson that I'd already fucking learned, because I wrote about it in the goddamn book, which was that I would rather spend time with my friends doing shit I want to do than just surrounded by a bunch of fucking girls all the time. But I was like a sex addict, man. And so, like, it's hard to like kick addictions. And it was like, you know, I was like addicted to the dopamine of having sex, of, you know, doing all this shit, you know, gambling, similar, like a lot of these things that I was doing were fucking dopamine hit, right, things, you know? Yeah, exactly. Like, pleasure spikes over and over and over again. It's like, you know, I talk about this, like, you know, you keep blasting the pleasure spike and eventually you have to do more to get the same, you know, hit. And then eventually you have to just do it to not feel like shit because you're numb to it. And that's where I'd get, like, at the end of those 3 year fucking runs, like, I was numb to all of it, you know? And I just, like, I didn't care. Like, it's, I don't know. I just felt like I had to fuck like 2-3 girls a day to not feel like a fucking, you know, like I was like being a fucking loser. You know, it's like, come on, man. Like, it's a fucking pussy today. What are you doing? And I don't know. It's like, that was like, I don't know. It's something about like having sex with a hot girl, like, always gives you something. Like, you know, eventually you don't feel much, but you feel a little bit. And so, yeah, I just get in these cycles where I would just be getting high and having sex all the time. And it just wasn't nearly as fun as going out doing Muay Thai, free diving, lifting weights with your buddies, hanging out, you know, doing shit like that, being on yachts, going to different places. And so, I don't know, I just kick the circus, and every now and then I'd need it, you know, fucking kind of like, okay, had a little bit of a lull.
You need the Snickers bar.
Yeah, let's go. Exactly. Like, I feel like a Snickers bar, but not like 3 years straight of it, you know, balls to the wall. It's a fucking lot.
So the turning point, when you mentioned like 2015, 16, 17, 18, you start to get really famous, like can't walk down the street famous, and security guards. How did you deal with people, like understanding who was your friends, who was trying to use you or Ignite or the people around you? Like, when did it kick in? You're like, wow, I really got to like protect my circle.
Well, I've never really had like a ton of like people that I consider friends. I had a lot of acquaintances.
Yeah.
And usually the way I'd handle it was like in L.A., if somebody couldn't do something for me, then I just wouldn't hang out with them. It was very like, kind of like, how do you call that?
Transactional?
Yeah, transactional relationship. Yeah, where it was like, I know they're like coming to me because I have good parties, I'm around a bunch of chicks or whatever. So it's like, if they're not offering me value, I don't even want to fucking like hear them out. And so I would have my friends that I had from like a long time ago, or people that I do shit with, and then, you know, other celebrities who also had fame and money and didn't need shit from me. So you just hang with people that like either didn't need stuff from you or could provide value, and then you didn't mind them, you know, having a transactional relationship. I just assumed that everybody in LA was like, you know, coming to me with their fucking hand out because most of them were. So I hated LA. Like, I was happy to get the fuck out of there. I never really like made any like real great friendships there. I mean, I have a lot of like acquaintances and people that I respect, and, you know, a lot of celebrities that, you know, I'm cool with, but not people that I'm like super tight with, that I like have history with, you know?
Yeah. So why'd you spend so much time, energy, and effort on the book? You said a year and a half on that book. Why'd you dive so deep into that?
Yeah, it was really like a disproportionate amount of effort. I just wanted to do it right. And I'm one of those people where like, if I'm going to do something, like I really want to fucking do it right. And I wanted to tell the story, and it's fuck, man, every fucking time I finished an edit, I really thought that I was done, or I thought that, yeah, I was just like close, and I just wasn't. And so 37 edits later, I finally like came up with something. And it was just funny because like people were like, yeah, you know, I'd be like, okay, I'm finally, because I'd finish an edit and be like, okay, I'm finally fucking done. And then I would like reread the edit, and then I'd find things and start tweaking with it and start tinkering with it and fucking around. And then sometimes I'd do it when I was a little bit tired, and I'd make it worse, and then I'd go back. And it was just like this whole like mind numbing process. But the good thing of it was, the upshot was that it forced me to kind of like look at my life and look at it objectively, like the things that made me happy, the things that didn't make me happy. And I guess, like, unless you write a book or do mushrooms or fucking acid or something, you don't really spend that much. I mean, maybe if you're like with a therapist or something, but I don't have a fucking therapist, you don't really spend a lot of time like reflecting back. You're so focused on like moving forward and, you know, doing this or your business or some chick you want to fuck or like some place you want to go or like whatever it is, like the future captivates your attention much more than the past. And so the book was kind of like just forced me to look at the past. And I think that's beneficial. I think it's helpful. Like if you don't learn from your mistakes, then, you know, you're bound to repeat them. Right. So I think it was probably one of the better things that I did for my fucking like soul. But it just took a lot of time because I wanted to get it right. That's the fucking short answer of it.
So speaking of your soul, the concept of the Money Mondays is we talk about how to make money, how to invest money, and how to give it away to charity. You have done a lot of charity things, but you never talk about it. You never post about it. One of the things that was really interesting, the one time you did post, was you were saying, I'm going to give out $10,000 to 10 different families by submitting your story. I don't remember the number. It was some ridiculous 200,000 comments or something insane of people tagging and putting their stories in. And you went and you donated way more than the 10K each, the 100,000 you promised. You donated way more. I'm not going to say the number because you never talk about it. But like you do charity in the background. Is it something that's passionate to you? And why don't you ever like to talk about it?
I just feel like it takes away from it. Like, you're going to do something, fucking do it. You don't tell everybody you're fucking doing it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, I had a lot of friends that like find a charity or then try and get all their friends to give the money to. I was just like, no, I'll just do it myself. Or I'd call a buddy and be like, hey, I'm going to put $100,000 in this. You want to match it? And then be like, sure. And then we'd do it and wouldn't tell anybody. It feels better like that. Like, I don't know. I just think it cheapens it, like, by broadcasting it. And I feel like there's so many people that do it to be seen doing it. And I guess like the reason that I do it is just as selfish as that. I mean, I do it because it makes me feel good.
Sure.
Not necessarily. I mean, like, yeah, I want to help people, but it makes me feel good to see that person like being happy. Like, I've given a bunch of money to like charity organizations, and I don't get nearly as much happiness out of that as like giving it directly to the person. So I think where I kind of like moved to was like directly giving it to the people, like handing them fucking cash, or, you know, wiring it directly to them, or spending time with the kids, or taking the kids out, shooting machine guns and fucking blowing up dynamite and fucking off-road racing and surfing and shit like that, you know?
Yeah.
So
the other reason for the Money Mondays is we all grew up thinking it's rude to talk about money. You're the most blunt friend that I have because you're very blunt about talking about relationships, sex, business, money, and everything between. Why do you think people are scared to talk about money? Why do you think it's rude to talk about money?
Because they don't fucking have any. Like, so many people like act like you got all this fucking money, but they don't. I don't know. Like, I feel like a lot of it is just like facade, it's bullshit. I mean, I don't know. Money is, it's a tool. I mean, that's what it is, a fucking tool. And so, like, you shouldn't be shy about it. Like, if you have it, fucking spend it. You know, like, a lot of people have a bunch of money and they don't use it to improve their life. Like, I've always been good about, like, using my money to improve my life. Like, I got a bunch of fucking chefs. I have a bunch of assistants. I have fucking pilots. I got a plane. Like, I got shit, you know, like, people do stuff. Like, if I need something done, like, shit gets done. Like, I haven't gone and got groceries in fucking 10 years. Like, I don't know. Like, I just don't waste time doing stuff that I don't want to do. Like, if I want to go play paintball, I have a paintball fucking tournament paintball field in my backyard. It'll be set up. I'll have fucking 8 referees. All the guns will be fucking lined up. We walk out, we play, and we fucking leave. You know, we don't wash the uniforms. We don't fucking go buy paint. We don't do any of that shit. We show up, we fucking play, and we leave. And so it's like, you use money as a tool to, like, save fucking time. And my dad taught me this when I was younger. Like, figure out what your time is worth. Like, my dad, when I was fucking young, his time was, he was making $10,000 an hour. So my mom, like, you know, she was giving me shit about not making my bed. I was like, well, dad doesn't make his bed. And, you know, my mom's like, well, you know, honey, why don't you make your bed and be a good example? And my dad was like, snap back. He's like, I make $10,000 an hour. I made $25 an hour to clean this fucking house. You want me to pay $9,000, you know, $975 to go show him how to make a bed? No, I'm not going to do that. You know, it's just like, this is the wrong answer probably, you know, for a fucking kid. But it was funny because, like, it does, like, teach you, like, time value money. It's like, what is your time worth? And it's like, if you're making $10,000 an hour, you should just never do anything, you know, that you don't want to do. Unless you're making over $10,000 an hour, you shouldn't fucking change your tires. You shouldn't change your fucking, you know, oil. You shouldn't mow your fucking lawn. Like, unless you enjoy doing that and it brings you satisfaction, then sure, fucking go do it. But, like, just, I don't know, just spend the time with your family, spend the time traveling, spend the time working out, spend the time bettering yourself, like, you know, teaching your kids something. I don't know, whatever the fuck it is that you want to do, other than, like, I don't know, I don't derive any pleasure out of mowing a fucking lawn or, like, washing clothes or making a bed. Like, I don't know, like, I just don't want to fucking do that, so I don't do it. And it's, to me, it's a big waste of time. Like, but if you don't make much money, then fucking do it. Like, I don't know, you know, it's just like, it seems simple to me. Outsource. And another thing is, like, people just always want to, like, oh, I want to do a job that I'm passionate about and I want to do something that I like. It's like, just fucking make the most amount of money in the least amount of time possible and then spend your time doing what the fuck you want to do. Like, I didn't give a shit about, like, what I was doing. I would have fucking shoveled shit if it paid enough money. Like, I didn't care. Like, a job is not about fucking having fun. Like, if you can find a job that you enjoy, like, great, hats off to you. But chances are there's a job that you'll make more money and less fucking time doing it. And I think I've, like, live so many lifetimes because I haven't fucking done a 9-to-5. Like, if you look at how much fucking time a 9-to-5 job wastes, if you calculate in, like, transit going to and from work, and those are all hours you're, most of the fucking population is doing some shit that they don't want to do. I mean, even if it's something they like to do, like, let's say you're really into scuba diving and so you decide to be a fucking scuba instructor, eventually you're going to get tired of teaching people how to fucking put on a rig and do the same thing over and over and over and over again. It's going to be fun for maybe like a month or 2 months or maybe a fucking year, but eventually you're going to get tired of doing the same goddamn thing over and over and over and over again. And so to me, it's like, if you're going to be doing something that you don't want to do, just make sure you're making the most amount of fucking money doing it. Make sure it's something you can scale. Make sure it's something that, like, eventually you have, like, a long-term exit, or you know, you could franchise the business, or you can pay somebody else to run it, you know, whatever. But there's, like, an exit, you know, like, so many people get, like, caught up in these jobs where they can't ever fucking leave, and they're never going to have a home run. They're never going to have, you know, success to the point where it gives them freedom. And, you know, life's not about fucking money. Like, the most of the things that I like to do don't require fucking money. Like, I don't need a shitload of money to be happy. I know that for a fucking fact. And in fact, like, some of the miserablest times of my life were when I had the fucking most money. And sometimes when I fucking were the happiest was the times when I had the least amount of money. So, like, it is absolutely not correlated to happiness. What it is correlated to is freedom and the ability to do what the fuck you want to do, not listen to anybody's bullshit. And, like, during this COVID scam, like, there's a perfect example. I never wore a fucking mask, but, like, maybe 3 times. Like, everybody's like, oh, you have to wear a mask to travel. It's like, I own a jet, motherfucker. I don't wear a fucking mask on my fucking plane. Suck my dick. Like, you know, and I didn't fucking do all this bullshit. I was not running around like a fucking sheep observing all these stupid fucking rules that were just complete fucking waste of time now that we look back. Like, you know, so I don't know, man. Like, it was nice for me. Like, I was on a fucking yacht for 3 months. Like, I was fucking traveling the world. Everybody else was locked in their fucking basement. I was working out every motherfucking day. I had an outdoor gym. I was getting the sun every day. I was healthy as a fucking horse. Never got sick. Like, but that's because I had money. Like, if I didn't have money and I lived in fucking New York, I'd probably have been fucking pretty miserable during that time. You know, like, fucking, I don't know, man. So I guess at the end of the day, like, it's nice. It's not like a something that you have to have. Like, figure out shit that you like to do. Like I said, most of the stuff I like to do doesn't require fucking money. The reason I like money is because it allows me to tell people to fuck off.
Right.
And that's the biggest thing for me, is not having to listen to other people's fucking bullshit. Since I was a little kid, I never want to listen to people's fucking shit. I think one of the best, most defining moments of my life was when I told my professor to go fuck himself and I left class. That was like maybe the highlight of my entire fucking life. Not fucking 10 models, not any of that shit, but telling him to get fucked because I had made $400,000 that month playing poker and I was not in the mood to hear his shit. And I fucking told him that. I said, motherfucker, I made more money last week than you'll make in the next three fucking years. So talk to me with some fucking respect. And we had it out. Like, and I was fucking right. And the thing that he said to me, the thing that he fucking said to me that really stuck out was, ah, if you're so fucking rich, what are you doing in college? And you know what? I thought about it for like six fucking seconds. I was like, you know what, dipshit? That's the first intelligent thing you've said all fucking semester. It's like, fuck you, I'm out of here. And I walked out, the whole fucking class went fucking crazy. And I never fucking forget the ride home. I was so fucking happy. I was like, I don't have to listen to this dumb fuck shit anymore. I don't have to show up to this fucking school. I don't have to listen to any of these motherfuckers. I can go wherever the fuck I want to go and nobody can tell me what to do. And that was like a fucking defining moment. And that was when I was like in my 20s, man. That was, I was like 27. You know, I was a fucking millionaire and I made the fucking money myself and I was stoked and I didn't have to listen to anybody's shit. And I was very fucking happy and I'll never forget it.
All right. Well, I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours, obviously. One final question. We like to keep these episodes to 40 minutes, so it's easy. The reason it's 40 minutes, by the way, is because the average workout is 45 minutes and the average commute is 45 minutes. So we do ours for 40 minutes. So Dan Bilzerian, last question. It's 2023. People are seeing a lot of crap in the media. They're worried about recessions. They're worried about fake COVID and all these different things in between them. What can people do to stay calm in the chaos?
Ice baths, workout, like get sun every day. Just the basic shit, honestly. Like, it isn't anything crazy. Like, if you work out 5-6 days a week, do ice baths when you wake up in the morning, before you go to bed, get sun every day, like, you will be significantly happier. And none of that shit costs anything. Yep. You know, anybody can fucking do that. So,
amen.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've just watched Dan Bilzerian, my co-host, The Real Tarzan, here on the Money Mondays. We want to make it not rude to talk about money, so it's really important for you. Share this with your friends. Share this with your followers. Get people to talk about money in your side of your circles. Make sure to follow Dan Bilzerian. You probably already do. Make sure to follow The Real Tarzan. And we will talk to you guys soon. Hopefully, we'll get Dan back here later this year.